Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we're out here at Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. The Predators hosting the Calgary Flames tonight. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. Pregame coverage starting right here at 6 p.m. on 102.5, The Game. And joining us now to talk about the Predators is Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet and the 32 Thoughts podcast. Elliot, Happy New Year. Appreciate you for joining us. So the Nashville Predators may very much so find themselves in a fringe playoff spot, a couple of points back, a couple of points up. But I think now it's a fair time that we can talk about the Predators legitimately vying for a playoff spot. So could you possibly see the Predators making a trade around the trade deadline to possibly push themselves over into a playoff spot?
Sorry, Carolyn, you cut out there at the end. What was the last part of the question?
Could you possibly see the Predators making a move around the trade deadline to kind of push themselves over over the line and make a push for the playoffs?
Like, you know, I think this. I think you guys have a long-term plan. And if it was something that made sense, like the cost wasn't prohibitive or anything like that, I could see, like, it has to make sense. Like, I don't think you guys are trading, like, a first-round draft pick or a really good prospect for it, unless it's someone who's young and has a lot of term. Like, you know, so that's kind of the way I look at it. If there's a small move there that can help you, or you're using your cap space to take someone's problem and you either get paid for it or you get nothing of a cost to get a decent player. Like, one of the guys I kind of wonder about is Kuzmenko from Vancouver. You know, earlier this year we talked about Garland from Vancouver. They were looking to move him. They needed to create cap room. And I think you guys were a team they talked to. Would you be willing to take Garland? It won't cost you a lot. And, you know, would you be willing to do it? And I think you guys looked at it and ultimately decided not to. I also wonder about a player like Kuzmenko. He had a really good year last year. He struggled this year. The coach isn't liking what he's seeing. He's signed for another year in the $5 million range. He's a good player, a talented player. And I'm sure Vancouver would be happy to say, all right, if you want to do this, either we'll incentivize you a bit or it's not going to cost you anything except the money. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that's the kind of player you guys are looking at. He's a player who's a bit down this year. He's better than he's shown. It's not going to cost you anything that will hurt your future to get it. And I think, Carolyn, if you guys are going to make a move, it's going to be that kind of a move.
Interesting. And that is one thing that Barry Trotz had mentioned is, look, we're not going to sacrifice the 2025, 2026, 2027 Predators in order to push the 2024 Predators over the line. But if there's a perfect marriage that's out there that's not going to hurt the future but it's going to help us now, then great. Seems like a no-brainer. But, I mean, to that point, going back on the question that I originally asked you, do you think it's fair for Predators fans, for us, to be talking about the Predators being a playoff team?
Absolutely it is. Fans are fans. And, you know, I think at the beginning of the year, we all didn't know what was going to happen. And now you're sitting here, you're three games away from the halfway point. And not only are you in playoff position in terms of games played, but you're in playoff position also in points percentage. Like, sometimes at this time of year, and Carolyn, the standings get a bit muddled, because not everybody has played the same amount of games. So I always look at points percentage. You guys are at 566. That's a playoff points percentage right now. You know, Edmonton is 4 points back with three games in hand. But the thing about, you know, Arizona's 3 points back with two games in hand. But the thing about those games is you got to win them. Mm-hmm. And right now you've got the same. You've got a better points percentage than Arizona. You've got a better points percentage in Edmonton. So you're in the race. And I think it's perfectly normal and perfectly acceptable for fans to say, fans of the Predators who pay their hard-earned money to go see them, to say, hey, this might be a playoff team this year. And I think the Predators probably enjoy that. It means there's buzz about the team. People are going to the games. But I think there's also a big picture that an organization has to have about where are we honestly. And if you're going to do things, they have to be responsible. They have to be smart. And I think that's what the Predators are going to do. I think they're enjoying this. I think they're enjoying being in the race. But anything they do is going to have a long-term view to it. Our best draft picks, they're not going anywhere. Our best prospects, they're not going anywhere unless you blow our socks off and give us a deal we can't say no to.
We're talking to Elliot Friedman. And Elliot, on the 32 thoughts, you guys had one that's right up D-Mace's alley here, because you got into a great, I think, philosophical discussion of the value of a goalie as opposed mm-hmm. to the value of a quarterback in football. And you mentioned this, like for fantasy football purposes, that you can always get a quarterback that's going to get you some points. There's only maybe a few that are going to separate you and are worth picking higher or putting more investment into. And you can make that case in this day and age of goalie. It's interesting perspective in Nashville, where you have UC Soros, who might be one of those guys who is worth more because he does maybe separate mm-hmm. you from this large pool of goalies that you can be successful with, a Darcy Kemper, for example. But you brought up Joe Flacco, who played some really good seasons with D-Mace in Baltimore, as a great example mm-hmm. of right guy, right team that can win a Super Bowl, but he goes to a different team and he's not nearly as effective. That's happening a lot with goalies right now, isn't it?
It's wild. You know, like Martin Jones got run out of San Jose and he got run out of Seattle, and now he's saving the season in Toronto. Cam Talbot was run out of Ottawa and left Minnesota because he basically lost his starting job. And now he's, you know, he's doing an unbelievable job in Los Angeles. And it was actually a GM that made the Flacco comparison to me. He said, I think goalies are right now like quarterbacks. There's eight who are the elite of the elite. And if you don't have one of those, you're scrambling to find the right combination. And the thing that, you know, he says it terrifies you is that in some cases there's no rhyme or reason to why a guy works in one situation and doesn't work in another. So I think that the people of Nashville should wake up every morning and pray to whatever deity they believe in and say, thank God that we've got one of them.
So with that in mind, you mentioned that Winnipeg made that same assessment, that Connor Hellebuck, who's a little older than UC Soros and also a workhorse like Soros, but they said, you know what, he's one of those special guys. We're going to invest big and believe that he's going to do it for the long haul. Do you think that's still probably the Predators' mindset right now? Even though Askarov came up, had an exciting win, he looks like he's going to be the real deal over time. But so how do you feel about what you're hearing about Soros these days?
Well, I mean, Barry Trotz is on the record as saying he's our guy. And I do think you guys thought about it last year at the deadline. I think there was a team that came forward and said, what would it take? I don't know, but I've wondered if it was the Kings, as a matter of fact, who said, what would it take? And I think there were some conversations back and forth, but obviously it never happened. And now you guys are saying, no, he's our guy, and we'd like to keep him. And, you know, I would do the same thing. I mean, look, like, one thing we know is that goalies can play a little later. And two, teams sometimes have identities. And if you look at the history of the Nashville Predators, they've always had consistent goaltending. And the last guy you had in there has got his number retired. So, like, I look at Rene, and he was the backbone of your team for a long time, and now you have a guy who's got a chance to be the similar thing. I you know, Barry Trotz benefited from Rene. He knows what it's like to have one of these goalies. I think it's your preference to keep him, and it's always contingent on two sides working out a deal, but I've got no reason to believe Soros is in any way unhappy.
Another thing you guys kicked around is there are a number of teams that would love to get another good goalie, even if it's just a backup goalie. So you've got Kevin Lankinen, who's in the last year of his contract, and you've got Askarov, who's still super young and maybe not as refined as he will be in another couple of years. But what kind of position does that put you in? Because, it, like you guys were saying, the market, a lot of teams that do have the extra goalie are holding out and saying, oh, if you want this goalie, you got to pay and pay dearly. So what, that seems to put the Predators in a pretty good position there.
Well, I think it puts them in a really good position. And there's nothing I saw from Askarov in that game in Washington that would make me fear that he's not ready for a bit more of a role. Now, I think what you want to do is I think you want to ease him in. He played very well on a high-pressure start. I was very impressed. You see the ability there. You see what this guy is capable of. And you just say, all right, we're plugging in this one night, you're going back, and we've got a plan. And, you know, really, you know what that plan is. Landon might be done at the end of the year, and Askarov comes in there and takes over as a backup. And, you know, I think, you know, it used to be that in this league, if you were ready, they said, okay, now you get your 60 games, your 65 games, you're the number one guy. It's not the way it works anymore. You know, the top goalies aren't supposed to play that much. The schedule really doesn't allow it. And the backups get more games. So Askarov can break into the NHL to really work in practice against regular shooters and playing, 25, 30 games a year. And, you know, like I said, watching him on Saturday night against Washington, I didn't see a guy who was overwhelmed by the moment. I didn't see a guy who looked out of place. I saw a guy who was like he's going to be a really good goalie for a long time.
Yeah, I do think that's something that maybe hasn't been considered as much, that you could have Askarov kind of like Saros under Rene for even a few seasons as the backup, still get enough room to where you could develop and play enough games. So, Elliot, let's shift the focus here to Calgary, the opponent for the Predators tonight. That's another team that really is at a crossroads, isn't it? They're right there at 500. They've got a good team that's playing well when they're right, but they've got big decisions to make with some of their contracts.
And I think they're in the process of doing that. They've already traded Nikita Zadorov, one of their defenses of Vancouver. Another one of their D, Noah Hanifin, they basically had a verbal agreement to sign him earlier in the year, and then it kind of came up to a rough streak and it kind of went away. So I think it's more likely than not he has dealt. Then eventually, first hand, I think they might keep him. We'll see. And they have a center, Elias Lindholm, who I think Colorado in particular really has its eyes on. And I think they're going to make changes. I think the calendar dictates they're going to have to make changes simply because a lot of these contracts are up. And, you know, I think that, you know, some of these players, the apps are in places that the Flames just aren't comfortable with. So I think more and more, and most of these players will be dealt sooner or probably later rather than sooner and closer to the deadline because teams are so cut out. I think the one thing about Calgary is the thing that's been good for them this year is that they realize that some of their young players are ready to contribute. You never know if these guys are ready to play roles. I think they're learning that some of them are definitely ready.
Elliot Friedman is with us, 32 Thoughts Podcast and Sportsnet. Elliot, on New Year's Day, we had the Winter Classic where, you know, Sir Mix-a-Lot doing the intros. You had the Pike Place Market.
And let's not forget Hart. Let's not forget Hart, a great 70s band there from Seattle, too.
Never want to forget them either. Sir Mix may just still be a little bit higher in my personal hierarchy.
Yep.
But it was the lowest rated Winter Classic game of all outdoor games, 1.1 million viewers. It's not lost on me that the NHL was competing with the Rose Bowl, was competing with Michigan and Alabama football. It's not lost on me that one player in the Winter Classic, the Seattle Kraken, they also had a local college team playing in the college football playoff later on that day. So the lowest ratings of any Winter Classic game. What's the NHL's plan to increase viewership and interest, at least in the United States?
Well, I think one of the things is that, you know, if we have a situation, and I'm not sure the way the schedule is going to work next year, Carolyn, But I know the playoffs are expanding to 12 teams, right? So I'm not sure. And one question I have is, what the schedule? Is it still two games on New Year's Day, or does that change? I'm not sure. I mean, one thing you can do is you can take, if this was a West Coast Classic, so it was at 12 local, which is 2 your time, 3 my time. Most of the Winter Classic games are played in new local, so you can put it in a place. I think one is bring it back to the Eastern time zone or your time zone, and you know, and be in a situation where it gets away from those games if it's still at, you know, 4 or 8 o'clock Eastern. That's one solution. I think the other thing is, you know, as you mentioned, it was the lowest rated Winter Classic. There's one game, the highest rated game on US TV this year, with ESPN's opening that game between Connor Bedard and Sidney Crosby, Chicago, and Pittsburgh. And they did not announce this year what they were doing with the Winter Classic. But while I was there, I was in Seattle, and I was asking people, where is it going to be next year? People were saying to me, I'll give you one hint. Who do you think that we want in the game next year? And the answer is Connor Bedard. And, you know, they want their star there. So I wasn't sure if that meant Chicago or home, Chicago on the road. I don't have anything confirmed, but there are definitely people hinting to me it's more than likely going to be Chicago home. So I think Connor Bedard's going to be it. I just don't know who they're playing. Maybe it's as simple as they're not Pittsburgh, but I don't know that.
Yeah, but I have said in the past, I think Major League Baseball and the NHL could do a better job of marketing its superstars. I think the NHL has done a fantastic job of marketing Connor Bedard, that even if you're not a Blackhawks fan, even if you're not an NHL fan, you probably know Connor Bedard's name. So it's tough to see the NHL not have as many eyeballs on the Winter Classic, on such a pageantry like the Winter Classic that we saw on New Year's Day. But Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast and Sportsnet. Elliot, we appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us, and we'll chat next week.
A great week. Chat next week. Also, don't forget the flying fish. I thought that was a real big highlight, too.
I wish I could have called that, Elliot.
We lost Elliot.
We got a little bit of a robo-Elliot. Lost Elliot Friedman there. But I think that – I appreciate you for joining us, Elliot. I think that the NHL's decision to try to compete – the Winter Classic's not always on New Year's Day. Is it? The decision to
compete, it is. It's always on New Year's Day. But I think the problem they ran into was because it was on the West – Coast, you know, in the Pacific, it can't start as early as you want it.
Right.
Like you want it maybe to be like noon,
and it couldn't.
They had to start noon out there is 2 o'clock here, 3 o'clock Eastern, and that ran into the football games. That didn't help. And you have two very new franchises that you don't really have that, you know, generational
fan base
following, fan base. Even though it is defending champs, you know, and Seattle put on a great show, obviously.
Oh,
but
absolutely.
that was a little tough in terms of competition.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing, too, is they have an outdoor series now. Remember, Nashville played Tampa. That game was more in February, right? So they're playing more outdoor games, so it's not quite as unique as it was when they first started the Winter Classic. Mm-hmm. But so many markets want to try an outdoor game. It's huge in the market, right? It's a big event. Like you could see, Seattle, they really got into that.
Yeah.
And they were all in. But for TV ratings, it's not a new thing anymore, right, to see a great outdoor game. So it doesn't really stand out as much as maybe it did the first few years. We were like, snowstorm in Buffalo. Man, they're playing outside. This is crazy.
And was it in Tahoe? I think it was the COVID year where they had to postpone it because the ice was melting outside.
Yeah, the glare was so big out there. Yeah. So that you can run into that from time to time, but
now I wonder what because that just took into account the U.S. right?
That was just the U.S. market.
I wonder what the Canadian market was.
Oh, I'm sure it was much higher. I'm sure it was fine in Canada.
Like,
That's never our problem.
To Alabama, Michigan.
So it's like, we may have dipped here, but if we still have our following, you know, our viewerships, north of the border, then maybe it's not a lose,
and
you know, in this
if your goal is to grow the game in the United States, which I think the NHL's goal is, and at least should be, if you're going up against college football, you're going to lose.
Yeah, you're going to lose no matter what.
Yeah, especially if you're going up against Alabama and Michigan in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
It's a losing battle. And I mean, I don't think
so. That probably killed. And also, it wasn't Seattle jumped ahead, stayed ahead. It wasn't like this back and forth game. So the third period, right there, a lot of casual people are like, "Well, I'll watch this a little bit," but then as soon as the Michigan game starts, I'm flipping over to that. So you probably lost a ton of people there. That you know, if the game's 3-3 and it's oh my gosh, I'll watch the end of this game before I flip over. That's kind of what you were in. Like I know that's what I did. I watched the game until the Michigan State game started. And then I'm like, oh, I got to watch the Michigan game.
With this.
Of course, I wasn't going to win that battle. Everybody in my house is coming over to watch the Michigan game. Like, hey, get this game on. I'm not watching this game.
You're outnumbered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get the game on.
I would have liked to have seen maybe a better strategy from the NHL just to make sure that you didn't have to choose. Because if you have to choose, you're choosing the Rose Bowl. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get into your thoughts on this. Plus, coming up next, we've been talking a lot about UC Soros, rightfully so, because this team ebbs and flows as UC Soros ebbs and flows. We've been talking about Philip Forsberg and his probably career season so far this season. We've talked about Ryan O'Reilly and his invaluable contribution to this team this season. But there's one person that we haven't talked a lot about. Maybe we should. And we'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we're broadcasting live from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. Visit springhillac.com. Live out here at Bridgestone Arena, the Predators taking on the Calgary Flames tonight. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. Pre-game coverage starting at 6 p.m. on 102.5 The Game. And we've talked a lot about UC Soros as far as our National Predators conversations are concerned, and rightfully so, because UC Soros is playing at an incredibly high level. UC Soros is playing like one of the best goaltenders in the National Hockey League. We talked a lot about Philip Forsberg, rightfully so. He leads this team in goals and assists and, of course, points. Talked a lot about Ryan O'Reilly and his contribution to this team off the ice and on the ice. I mean, he's been everything that you could have asked for Ryan O'Reilly to be. He has been as advertised, and I could argue even better than as advertised. But one player that we haven't talked a lot about is Roman Josi. Roman Josi is third in the National Predators in terms of points. He has 30 points, 8 goals on the season. It seems to me like Roman Josi has had a fairly quiet season so far. And really, I don't know if that's necessarily because it's been overshadowed by what Philip Forsberg has done, what UC Soros is doing, or if Roman Josi is having maybe a little bit of a quieter season than National Predators fans are accustomed to.
Well, I would disagree. I think he's having a very good season. I think what's different is he doesn't have the puck as much because of the system. We talked about the Bruno effect yesterday.
Yeah.
Where picture a basketball game where if you got the rebound under your own basket and you dribbled all the way down to the other end of the court and scored, that's UC Soros can do that. Like, he's got that ability.
Yeah.
But what Andrew Burnett wants is you get the rebound and you hit the outlet pass. You want to get it up the court quicker, or in this case, the ice quicker. So that's really the principle, and that's an adjustment for Roman Josi. He's still got 30 points in 38 games. That still ranks very high among defensemen.
Yeah.
It's just not the over a point per game kind of thing that we saw a couple years ago. But what it is doing, I think, is it is enhancing what you're getting from Forsberg and O'Reilly, et cetera. The forwards, I think, are having more success. And I still think by the end of the year, you're going to see Roman Josi have the numbers. So I think he's been asked to play differently, and I think it says a lot about Roman Josi that he can make that adjustment. So I think he's been very effective, and I think it's not easy for every player to do that, right, to be asked to change from something that he's really gifted at doing. And he still can do it, but there's just different times where he just is not able to do it as much. There's still times where that comes out, But I think he's really bought in to being part of what the team is trying to do. So it's a really interesting observation. But I think he's having an excellent year under those circumstances.
Absolutely think he's 110% bought in. And I did wonder, in terms of the system, is it that the system just doesn't allow him, like you said, to have the puck as much? Or is it Roman Josi getting accustomed to a new system?
I think early in the year, the first month or so, I think everybody was getting accustomed to it, but maybe him more than anybody, just because there's been in the past, it's time, hey, we need some offense. Roman, just take it.
Yep.
Just take it. Go do it. Now it's like, look, we'll get the offense.
You don't have
get
to
the
do
puck
everything.
Ahead, trail in behind, we'll get it back to you. And 30 points in 38 games, I don't think it's that far off the pace of where he's been most years, maybe not his best ever. But I think it's only getting better. The other thing that you're seeing too is you're now seeing guys like Luke Shen, Dante Fabro, Jeremy Lauzon, those defensemen there, they're all coming around. They're all taking good steps forward. Ryan McDonough has been very effective playing with both Josi and recently playing with Luke Shen. So I think as a group, as everybody gets more and more used to playing in the system, which is different. It's quite a bit different than what some of the guys have had before on different teams, and definitely different than what they were playing the last couple years under John Hines. But I think as they learn it, they're getting more effective. Their individual traits are coming out better in the system. Like Colton Sisson is another good example. He's really taken a jump with the way they're playing in this system. So it's a little bit of a give and take, but I still think Josi is playing at a star level, superstar level.
There's only one puck, and there's only a
yeah,
certain
it's
number
just,
of minutes
it's just
in a game.
He's going about it a little different. It's not as noticeable because he doesn't have the puck as much.
Yeah. Right.
But he's still been very, very effective, I think.
Yeah, it's been it looks different, but they're still getting they're getting the production from other people. And if he needs to do it, I'm sure he can do it.
Yeah. Well, that podcast that you guys referred to with Dmitry Filipovic that was about Forsberg and why is Forsberg doing so well, that was one theory that was thrown out there, that the fact that they are trying to push the puck ahead more to the forwards on the fast break, you know, on the rush, is that taking a little bit away from Josi but adding a lot more to Forsberg? Mm-hmm. That was the theory, and I think that's a fair theory to throw out there, that because Forsberg's getting the puck more in positions where he can do something with it, he's doing more, and Josi has the puck a little less, and so he's got to go about it a little different way. But the end result is good things for the Predators, which Roman Josi will put his hand up and say, I'm all for that. Let's do what we need to do.
Right, and that is crazy to think about with a player like Roman Josi, with skill like Roman Josi, when he doesn't have the puck as much, it really is end up being a net positive for the Nashville Predators. And that's nothing against Roman Josi or his ability or what he does for this team or his contribution to this team. But just seeing the wealth essentially spread around to different players, it's a different style and it's good to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good thing to keep watching for, because I still think that Roman Josi is learning and adapting within the system how to bring out his superstar ability.
Yeah.
So I think by the end of the year, the numbers will look fine. But it is a different system that he's playing in.
Well, it works better for the team. So in the long run, it'll work better for the team.
Predators hosting the Flames tonight. What do you want to see, Willie?
It's an important game. Andrew Burnett, they've played twice against the Flames. Both have been very tough, hard-fought games that the home team has won. Mm-hmm. The Flames are playing really well right now, but as we talked about with Elliott, it's now or never for them. If the players in that locker room want to keep the team together and make the playoffs, they've got to make a big push now, because if they're still around where they are right now at the trade deadline, they've got no choice but to try to get some assets back, kind of like the Predators last year.
Right.
They've got some guys that probably won't be back either way, so you might as well try to get some assets back. So there's pressure, I think, in Calgary to get it done right now. They're going to roll the same lineup out there tonight. So UC Saros has played two very good games against the Flames. Remember the game in Calgary, Saros was the only thing that they had going, because they had a lead for a good portion of the game. It was one of those games where they couldn't hold on to the lead, which has been something they're trying to get better at in the second half. But they had the lead thanks to Saros. They had a couple of nice plays, and then they were just getting peppered. But Soros kept it in it for a while, but he couldn't hold it for the game, and they lost in regulation time. So big game, big swing game. There's one of the articles I was reading, they call it a Peloton, right? You know, you're watching the big bike race. The Peloton is the big group of teams that's hanging together, kind of drafting off each other, trying to wait to make their move.
Yeah.
There's a big group of teams in both conferences, but definitely in the West. Mm-hmm. And these are both, I would say, the Predators are sort of the top of the Peloton, right? They're in wild card position number one. The Flames are on the lower part, right? And the Flames are trying to make their move up that if they're going to be successful. There's like six or seven teams legitimately that are going for two spots. So that it's going to be a heck of a race. Every game is big.
And that's a kind of feels like a completely different vibe. You go back to the game on Tuesday playing Chicago. I mean, Chicago is a team that's okay with not winning right away right now.
Absolutely.
Nor are they poised in a position to win right now. It's a completely different vibe with Calgary because they're in a window, like you said. They're in an interesting position, Calgary is, I believe. That it might remind me a little bit of what the Predators have looked like the past couple of years, is holding on to a certain window and making a push for the playoffs. Maybe not necessarily a cup-contending team, but getting the most out of what your team has.
Yes, and along those lines, probably the biggest story in Calgary this year is a guy named Jonathan Huberdeau, who is sort of their version, I would say, of a Matt Duchene, Ryan Johansson, right? They signed him. Well, they traded Matthew Tkachuk, who said, I'm not going to stay. You got to trade me because you might as well. I'm leaving for free agency. It's like, okay, we got a year left. We got to trade him. What do we do? They made the deal with Florida. Mm-hmm. They got Huberdeau back and Mackenzie Weegar, one of their better defensemen. Then they signed Huberdeau. And they said, okay, we lose Tkachuk, but we get Huberdeau, who was flourishing and scoring a ton of points for, guess who? Andrew Brunette in Florida. Brunette was using him with some guys. He was putting up career-high numbers. Huberdeau was a high first-round pick back in the day. But since he's gone to Calgary, he has not been the same player. So that's what they're trying to figure out. He's making something like $10 million a year. He's one of the higher-paid players in the game. But right now, he's got 5 goals and 12 assists. Mm-hmm. So that's been a big story. In the first game between the Predators and the Flames, they benched Huberdeau in the entire third period and still came back and won the game. So they've been trying different things to get him. It sounds very familiar to me with John Hines and all the things he was trying to do. How do we get Johansson out of this funk? How do we get Duchene out of this funk? They're going through that with Huberdeau right now. So he's a guy to watch tonight because he scored a big goal for them in the last game. And it's just an interesting story that Brunette was the guy in Florida that got more out of him than anybody else has gotten.
And as far as this game is concerned tonight, you look at Calgary, you win this game, great. You stay on track. You avoid getting into that slump that we had talked about of you just can't afford at this point in the season to go on a 5, 6, 7, whatever it is, game losing streak. So you win this game, you pick up important points, you stay in good position to potentially make a playoff push. If the Predators lose this game tonight, you know, maybe you drop one, well, then you head on the road to Dallas, another incredibly important game and incredibly important points to pick up.
They've got two trips to Dallas coming up. And Dallas obviously is a powerhouse.
Got, at least one was here.
There's one more here with Dallas late in the season. Next two games with Dallas are both in the next week, 10 days or so, both down there. Again, this is the marathon, right? We're nearing the halfway point, and it's time to start talking about who's in it, who's not in it, because you're going to start counting down to the trade deadline and all the decisions teams have to be made.
Yeah.
But there's a long, long way to go. So you can't get hung up on, you know, a win here, a loss there. But it's just one of those, every game means something, right? You have to try. And one of Andrew Brunette's things recently is we've got to get back to dominating at home. They had lost 3 games in a row here until the other night. Mm-hmm. And so I know he wants to see that kind of same thing. Take advantage of when you've got the home ice advantage. The crowds have been great. Come out. They had the start they were looking for the other night. They came out of the gate, they were flying. The crowd was buzzing. They easily could have scored 2 or 3 or 4 goals, I think, in the first period. Only had 1. And so that was a little bit of a downer. And then they kind of were sluggish in the second period. Mm-hmm. So being opportunistic, I think, will be important. Use the crowd to your advantage when you can.
Yep, Predators in action tonight hosting the Calgary Flames. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. Coming up next, we'll chat with our friend Ali Melnicki of Zen Sports. No Thursday night game tonight, but we've got a full slate of NFL games on Saturday and Sunday. Some key matchups, some important games, speaking of playoff pushes. So we'll chat with Ali Melnicki coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan tonight for Vanderbilt women's basketball. The Commodores will be on the road taking on Mississippi State. Tip-off at 6:30 p.m. and pregame at 6:15 p.m. Coverage is also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Lee D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app, live out here at Bridgestone Arena. Predators taking on the Calgary Flames tonight. We do not have a Thursday night football game tonight, but we have a full slate of games over the weekend and a lot of win and in scenarios. Joining us to give her best bets of the weekend in the final week of NFL action is Ali Melnicki of Zen Sports. Ali, appreciate you for joining us. I want to kick it off with the local team, Titans taking on the Jags this weekend. I have looked at some of the experts' pick. There's actually a lot of people taking the Titans in this one. Could be Derrick Henry's final home game. The status of Trevor Lawrence is still kind of up in the air. So who do you like in the Jags-Titans game this weekend?
I'm going to go with the home team, too. I like the local team, too. I like the Titans in this situation, at least taking the points. We don't know how Trevor Lawrence is going to be. Even the games that he's played since getting injured, he hasn't looked 100%. The Jags have been struggling as of late, and we all know teams that tend to need a win sometimes end up choking in the final week. I think the Titans want to play upset alert, so I'm going to go with the Titans.
The Titans know all too well about choking in the final week of the season when I knew they need to win and get in the playoffs. Looking at the other game in the AFC South, if the Titans do beat the Jags on Sunday, that's great news for the Indianapolis Colts. If the Jags lose and the Colts beat the Texans, then they find themselves in the playoffs. Who do you like in that scenario?
I'm going to ride with the Texans. They were one of my bold picks to make the playoffs at the beginning of the season that people told me I was crazy for. I said the Texans would make the postseason and the Browns. I want to be right on both of them. C.J. Stroud is back. I know he was a little shaky last week returning from a concussion. I think that this kid is the rookie of the year for the offensive rookie of the year. I like the Texans in this situation, so I'm going to stick with the Texans.
Allie, now the Bills and the Dolphins, AFC East, whoever wins the division. Do you take the Dolphins and the points plus 3?
I'm going to go with the Bills. I really think that they have everything to lose in this situation, and they've been the hot team as of late. We've seen Miami mightily struggle against the Ravens last week, which surprised me. Miami comes into the situation really banged up. They lost Bradley Chubb for the year. I don't think they're going to have Xavier Howard. Jalen Waddle might not play. So I just think Miami's too banged up. I'm curious if they even play all their starters if they fall behind, because they already have the playoff spot clinched. I know they want the division, but better to get into the playoffs healthy than not healthy. So I'm going to ride with the Bills on this one.
Now, how about the Bills and the Browns and the Bengals? Are you taking the points in this one?
I'll lay the points of the Bengals. I mean, the Browns are sitting most of their starters, including Joe Flacco. They really don't have much to play for. They have their postseason bid locked up. The Bengals, they still have a nice story behind Jake Browning, who's still auditioning to be the backup next year for the Bengals, and maybe earn a starting spot somewhere if he can. So I'm gonna lay. I know it's a lot of points, but the Browns have not much to play for. Bengals, even though they're not playing for a playoff spot, they still have pride to play for. So I'm gonna go with Cincinnati.
Ali, in another one, the same category of all they have to do is beat blank, you've got the Buccaneers who squandered a chance last week, but yep, all they have to do is beat Carolina. But as you mentioned, it can really be nerve-wracking if the game goes on and you're not putting a team away, and the Bucs are obviously a flawed team. So what do you think of that one?
Yeah, I'm going to at least take Carolina with the points here. I know Carolina obviously has been the worst team in the league all season. But again, the Bucs have really been lucky in a lot of their wins. We saw last week Baker Mayfield got a little banged up. There's a lot of pressure going into this game. I think at least it's going to be tight, so I'd be safe taking the points, even though the Panthers are that bad. Bryce Young still has a lot to prove in his rookie season with one game to go. So I'm going to go with the Panthers and the points on this one.
All right, now I'm looking at the Giants. They're taking they're playing the Eagles.
Okay, the
Eagles just lost to the Cardinals, right? The Giants played the Eagles pretty tough on Christmas. Mm-hmm. Was that Christmas night or Christmas Eve? I can't remember.
It was Christmas.
Yeah. So here's what we need here. Allie, we need a Giants win. That would move the Titans possibly up a notch in the draft pick here. So let's go G-Men. It can happen,
yeah,
right?
All we want to do is beat the Eagles. I don't even know the last time that we beat the Eagles. I'm hoping for a win. I know the Eagles, they have a postseason bid locked up. I think it's highly doubtful that Dallas loses to the Commanders. So the Eagles really aren't playing for the division. I mean, unless the Cowboys totally blow it. I think that you have a lot riding with the Giants. It could be Saquon's last game as a Giant. There's a lot still going on. The Giants always play for pride. So at least I like the Giants to cover. I love the upset, but I'm going to take them with the points.
Allie, never count out the Cowboys blowing it. I have learned my lesson, and I think that maybe Cowboys fans have learned their lessons as well. Looking at the Steelers-Ravens game, you know, I think that the final week of the season is always very interesting because you have to take into account who's actually playing. I mean, Baltimore has locked up the number one seed. Could the Steelers find their way in the playoffs if they beat the Ravens, assuming the Ravens might not play all of their starters on Saturday, Sunday? They play on Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday. I think the Steelers win this game. I think that they have a lot riding with them with Mason Rudolph ever since he took over. He seems to have sparked life in that offense. They have a lot of confidence. They're also playing for Mike Tomlin. I know they love their coach, and there's some in the Pittsburgh media that have been wondering if he's going to get fired, which I absolutely don't think he should. He's one of the best coaches in the league. I think Pittsburgh pulls it out. I don't know if they make the playoffs. They need a lot of team to lose, but they have everything to play for the win. The Ravens have the number one seed locked up. Mm-hmm. Lamar's not starting. I doubt most of the starters are going to play. So I think the Steelers pull this one out.
I'm with you on that one. But looking overall at the entire slate of games this weekend, what do you think is your best bet of the weekend? Whether it's against the spread, straight up, a prop bet, what's your favorite bet of the weekend?
Ooh, I think I'm going to have to go with the Titans on this one. I really like them going up against Jacksonville. Let's not forget last year, the last game of the season, when the Jaguars beat them to go into the playoffs. There's still that revenge factor there. So I don't know if they'll end up pulling off the upset, but I like taking those 5 points right there.
I think you just made a whole lot of friends here in Nashville. And speaking of that Titans game, maybe looking at a prop bet, this could very well be Derrick Henry's final game as a Titan in a Titan uniform at Nissan Stadium. I know a whole lot of fans are at least emotionally preparing themselves for this to potentially be Derrick Henry's final game. Over or under on rushing yards for Derrick Henry on Sunday?
I'm going to go over. I think they feed him the ball a lot this weekend, especially uncertainty at the quarterback level. I think that this is Derrick Henry's game. Whether or not it's his last one with the Titans, I think that it's going to be his time to shine. So I think he's going to get more touches than he had all season, so I would go with the over.
I think I'm with you. At least I hope so, as long as that offensive line can hold up and create some holes for Derrick Henry. Allie Melnicki of Zen Sports, appreciate you for joining us, Allie, and enjoy the slate of games this weekend.
Thank you. You guys, too.
All right, appreciate it. Allie Melnicki, she is the very best. That's going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company is up next.
Be love and love on your people. Peace.